Transportation, Monday morning. First on the agenda this morning is an overview of our safety corridor. Roy Gonzalez. Larry Christensen. We'll move from that to overview into public hearing on House Bill 2569. So, welcome, Roy.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Troy Costales. I'm manager of the Transportation Safety Division for the Oregon Department of Transportation. With me this morning is Larry Christensen, who has responsibility for the roadway safety work zone corridor program within our division. This morning we'd like to present to you a quick overview of the safety corridor program, why there is a program, current information on the corridors, the 14 corridors we have in the state as far as latest numbers from 1999, and then a brief comment about where we're going with the program. And first I'd like to do is start off by turning it over to Larry and let him start with some of the background of the safety corridor program.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. It's a pleasure to be here this morning with you. What I want to do is just give you an introduction and a background to Oregon's safety corridor program, and I'd like to answer any questions you have right after that. The safety corridor concept is a result of a national workshop that took place more than a decade ago, and what they were trying to do is find concepts that for traffic safety that could be implemented immediately and at low cost and with high impact. And Oregon recognized that this concept of applying the 3E, engineering, enforcement, and education, to problem stretches of highways had a high likelihood of success. So our first corridor was down in southern Oregon, Oregon Route 62, from I-5 to Eagle Point. And, the crash experience there was 16 traffic deaths within a 13-month period. And the Rogue Valley Council of Governments was pretty desperate to find a solution and quick. So we brought this concept to the roadway and immediately saw results, deaths dropping off precipitously. So we saw an immediate success. Since that time, we've designated an additional 13 safety corridors in the state of Oregon. Primarily, these corridors are designated at the request of legislators, citizen groups, or local agency interests. Typical actions within the safety corridor include enforcement. I might add that enforcement is the most effective tool that we have. We can get it on the road immediately, and of course, people behave directly proportional to whether they think they're going to get caught or not. So enforcement is the prime action on safety corridors. Addition to that is education, which comes in the form of brochures, media feature stories, public service announcements, etc. And in addition to that, minor engineering, such as what we're seeing out on Highway 18, rumble strips on the side, in the center, enhanced signing, those sorts of things. But typically, the engineering enhancements are minor. The definition of a safety corridor is a roadway where we typically have a higher than average crash or fatality rate. And that is the case on all 14 corridors that we've designated, or it was the case at the time of designation. Determination of the designation is based on that crash history, as well as finding out if there's a significant local interest in investment, primarily from state and local enforcement. And again, the value of the safety corridor program is the ability to take an emerging problem on the safety corridor and bring an immediate response to that problem. And I'll let that go as kind of a beginning overview and background. If there's any questions at this point, I'd be happy to take them.
In your packet, attached to the letter, there are two pages I'd like to call your attention to. First is the spreadsheet, and second is the map. The map is giving you just a visual representation of where the corridors are. On the spreadsheet, I'd like to take a moment to explain this. This actually is something we've used for the past few years, but Representative Brown and Representative Merkley had earlier asked about, well, where are we in relationship to some of the corridors? What's the latest information? And, for instance, if you look at the very first line for Oregon Route 62 out of Medford, the first three columns are dealing with the overall crash rates. That's taking all types of crashes based on the travel through that particular stretch of road. In 1999, Oregon Route 62 had a crash rate of 1.20, and in 1999, the average for that type of road was 1.70. So the crash rate for Oregon Route 62 is well below the average. When you scoot out to the next three columns labeled fatality rates, the bold number 13.06, as Larry had mentioned, that was the fatality rate the year that the corridor was designated as a safety corridor. It had a fatality rate of 13.06. Last year, that corridor had a rate of 1.21, compared to statewide average for that type of road of 1.93. So just looking at the very first one, the I-5 to Eagle Point, you can see that the fatality rate has dropped significantly, and in both cases, the crash rate and fatality rate are below the statewide average for that type of facility. That is the case in almost every single corridor. The only place where we have for 1999 has seen a problem is on Oregon Route 18, Grand Ron. You look over the designated rate for fatality rate when it was put in place was 4.40. 1999 was 13.31, with an average for that type of road in the state of 2.34. But I will note that the 13.31 in the year 2000 was zero. There were no fatalities in that particular corridor during the 2000 year. So if we were to update this one more year current, you would see that number drop to zero.
Chairman, Representative Devin.
These are fatality rates per, let's see,
100 million.
Per million miles. How many fatalities were there actually on 18 in this corridor?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Devlin, that 13.31 was 11.
11.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Brown.
Troy, when was the rumble strips put out there?
Mr. Chair, Representative Brown, they were put out within the last 6 months and have been very well received by the public. And in spite of the fact that we had to eliminate a fairly lengthy passing area to put those in the center line, that was well accepted.
Mr. Chair.
One second. Representative Brown.
Do you think that that's the reason that we've had seen the dramatic reduction in 2000 was putting in the rumble strips?
Mr. Chair, Representative Brown, the success of each safety corridor is, as I mentioned, a combination. And I hesitate to pin it to one particular fix. I think we have yet to see or gather the benefits of that particular minor engineering improvement. But the success on Highway 18 is truly a 3E success story: education, enforcement, and engineering.
Representative Nelson.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Just wanted to point out that while we are, you know, could celebrate the zero in 2000, we've already had fatality this year on Highway 18, and it still is number one as far as danger, and we need more help to prevent those from happening.
Good question. The enforcement side of this, are there additional fines if you're caught speeding in these safety corridors? Is the fine rate higher or double or something?
Mr. Chair, the 99 session introduced a pilot project into law, which allowed the department to designate two safety corridors as areas where traffic fines could be doubled. Highway 18 is one of them. U.S. 26 from Sandy to Mount Hood is the other.
And that pilot, is there a sunset on that pilot?
There is a sunset this year, December 31st.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Nelson.
It is my understanding that there is a bill to extend that sunset.
Is there anything else, Troy, that you'd like to share?
Mr. Chairman, I have Larry talk a little about where are we as a department and as a division heading towards the future with the Safety Corridor Program, and then that will conclude our presentation.
Very good.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, things that I've learned as program manager for the Safety Corridor Program for the last 11 years is that, one, there tends to be a lot of excitement and local, state and local investment in the initial emphasis period. After that, and I mentioned before that enforcement is the key, really, to the results that we enjoy on the safety corridors. We find that enforcement tends to find other priorities or be drawn away by other priorities. So in federal fiscal year 99 and continuing to date, I began to allocate resources for the top safety corridors. So that was one change that we've made. Another is that we want to increase the accountability on these safety corridors, realizing that we can't continue to designate stretches as safety corridors without losing some of the power, if you will, or diluting the effectiveness. So what we're doing is beginning July this year, instituting a program where all safety corridors are required to have a local stakeholder investment plan, which will be implemented July 1 and carried out through the following year. So that's another change to move us toward an accountability, and if there is no interest in local investment, there is a danger of decommissioning of that safety corridor. Beyond that, my interest is to see us move from this, albeit successful, but it is a reactive, at this point, program, where we respond to requests as fast as we can and with resources that we have. But I'd like to move toward a proactive program where we begin to identify the problem stretches on the state system and address those with this 3E philosophy. And try to tackle the highest problem areas as we identify them with the resources that we have.
Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
Representative Zoner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Jeff. When you say local investment, what other types of investment could they get involved in other than giving you money?
I'm talking about, Mr. Chair, Representative Zoner, excuse me. I'm speaking of investments in education, where a business on the safety corridor might put up a safety drive safely reminder on their reader board on their business. They might participate in a press conference. Local enforcement, such as in our case, Yamhill County Sheriff's Office, might agree to voluntarily commit resources for that safety corridor. So this is the type of investment that I'm talking about.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Ben, Representative Krupp.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What other ideas are you playing with for safety corridor enhancements? I know one of the things that's a big issue sometimes on a dark, rainy winter night is maybe the striping on the roads is not as reflective as it could be, or in a fog condition. What are you doing with those types of ideas to enhance the safety aspects in terms of visual issues?
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, Representative Krupp, my proposal is that in the future and currently is part of the offering that I make in the top five problem safety corridors, but I'd like to expand that to a sort of a guaranteed package, if you will, with a minor engineering element to offer more retracing of the lines than currently the maintenance forces have in their budget. They're very strapped, and they're just challenged to provide the level of reflectivity on the striping that is so helpful. One thing that we can do is provide those funds to help them increase the amount of times that they do retrace those lines, or provide money for the durable striping, which, of course, as you know, has a long life.
But much more expensive in the process.
Much more expensive.
Well, Mr. Chair, one more question. You were talking about you had made, as program manager, you'd made a decision to redirect
some of your resources to the, and really concentrate on corridor enhancements. Is that something that you have the flexibility to do in the future to gain some of these advantages?
Representative Krupp, what I would propose, and in working with my manager Troy and the rest of the department, is to try to move some of the department's resources in this direction so that we can provide a more enhanced program of minor engineering improvements, plus the education, plus the enforcement, so that we can be sure of those elements that we know that work are present for the top problem priority corridors.
Mr. Chair, Representative Krupp, I'd like to add that the money that's going towards this is some of the funds that Oregon's receiving because of our 0.08 blood alcohol content level.
Okay.
Oregon receives some money from the U.S. Department of Transportation as incentive because of that, and we have flexed some of this funds into the minor engineering safety corridor program in order to put some funds there in order to do some of the minor engineering and pay for some of the education and some of the enforcement on these corridors.
Mr. Chair, then that comment leads me to this comment, is how much money are we receiving because of the 0.08 blood alcohol level in statute, and are there other opportunities within the federal ODOT grant money or so forth to use for these types of enhancements, both enforcement and the engineering aspect?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Krupp, Oregon receives between $1.8 to $2 million per year. It's a competition, if you will. Those states that have 0.08 enacted and enforced go into the list that U.S. Department of Transportation then splits the money out based on state's population. Most recently, Washington and Texas joined the list of states with 0.08, so our share dropped from one year to the next because we had two higher populated states. Of that money that comes in to the department, approximately $750,000 of that is identified towards roadway safety elements, not just for the safety corridors, but also for work zone, for training of local engineers, for their activities towards the truck safety corridors as well. All are part of that $750,000. A large share of that fund also goes towards enhancing the impaired driving program, since that's the reason why we get the money to begin with.
Right. Okay, thank you.
Any other questions, Representative Nelson?
Thank you very much. I want to follow through with Mr. Chair, with Representative Krupp's question. Are there other grants available? And I want to thank you all, Troy and Larry, very much for everything you do to keep us safe. Safety is the top priority in everything we do. And just keep on working on it. Please, are there other grants available besides the federal funding?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nelson, through our office, there is not. Our funds are safety-oriented, and the safety corridor program is one of many that we handle within our office. There are the regions and district offices, ever since this program has been created, have participated as best they can in order to find different things, you know, bring some of their money together to do some striping or to do some signing. As far as I know of, there isn't anything at the federal level that's a special type of money that we can apply for as a state. It's a matter of us directing the funds that we have within our control to all the various priorities that we have to deal with in safety.
Mr. Chair, follow up, please.
Yes.
Troy, are we getting everything back that we should be getting for our tax dollars from the federal government?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nelson, Oregon is one of six states that receives every safety incentive dollar that USDOT offers. And we have received all of those funds for the entire year of the Federal Transportation Funding Act, T21. And so we're one of the very lucky few that are getting everything that we put in, if not more.
Good going.
Any other questions?
Well, is this for a little bit later time, or is this?
Yes. Very good. Thank you very much for your testimony. Maureen? And you might as well just hang right where you're at for a moment. With that, we will open a public hearing on House Bill 2569. John, do you like to...
Thank you, Chair Starr, and members of the committee. We have before you House Bill 2569. This was a law in was passed in the 99 legislature. We've heard that already in testimony. It was in House Bill 3085, authorized the Department of Transportation to establish two safety corridors as pilots for a doubling of traffic fines. The two corridors chosen, as you've already heard also, just to review, is Highway 18 from Grand Ronde to Bellevue, which is 17 and a half miles, and U.S. Highway 26 from Sandy to Mount Hood, which is approximately 32 miles. House Bill 3085 in the 99 session required the Supreme Court to double the fine portion of the bail amount for certain offenses within the two corridors, and Class A, B traffic infractions, C and D traffic infractions also were doubled in these two corridors. You have before you a fiscal impact statement that was just released about 5 minutes to nine before committee. This bill has no revenue impact. On the amendment, there is one amendment proposal. This bill basically is to eliminate the sunset, which is scheduled for December 30th, 2001. We have an amendment before us, the Dash 1 amendment, in essence to extend the sunset 2 years. You have the fiscal statement before you.
Thank you very much. Terry Thompson.
Past Representative Terry Thompson. It's very good to be here. And this bill was originally an idea that I had one day driving from the coast, because I experienced that one of the things that affects people's most of all is when it affects them in their pocketbooks. And I was trying to think of everything I could think of to try to save lives on that particular section of the road. And the idea of doubling the fine came to me literally while I was driving through the area, because it was the thing that I would hate to see happen the most as a driver, because I drive that every day. But I went ahead and put the bill in, and we passed it last session. Then, right before the session started, I was over at Grand Ronde and met with all the local law enforcement officers from Polk County, Marion County. I think there was people from the coast. We all met there at the casino, and this bill came up, and we realized that we hadn't dropped a bill to extend the sunset, or there was a sunset date. So what I'm going to ask this committee to do is to extend it at least 2 years, if not four, or take it off entirely. That's up to the discretion of the committee. I think that we need more information about what the effect of increasing fines is on people. 2 years isn't enough. Every law enforcement person there felt that we should at least, at a minimum, extend it another 2 years so we get more information. So that's why the bill's in front of you, and I hope the committee will make the right decision.
Thank you very much. Troy or Larry? Either one. Larry.
For the record, my name is Larry Christensen with the Department of Transportation. As former Representative Thompson explained, this bill would seek to renew the sunset and allow the department to extend the program to all safety corridors that are designated currently within the state. As also was mentioned, the 99 legislature passed this bill, and the two corridors that were designated, Highway 18 Safety Corridor and U.S. 26 Safety Corridor from Sandy to Mount Hood, signs were placed advising motorists that those fines were doubled in 1999. As also mentioned in the previous overview that we did, the benefit of the Safety Corridor program is the fact that we can bring to bear some resources immediately and have a great effect. And part of that, which has been a part of the school zone safety program and the work zone safety program, was the doubling of fines in these two corridors as a pilot project. I recognize that the bill, as introduced, was allowing the department to extend this, the potential for doubling the fines to all safety corridors. But as also was mentioned by former Representative Thompson, we would recommend a little more study time to find out the benefit of the doubling of fines in the safety corridors. We also found that there was a bit of confusion on the part of the public and on the part of the courts as to the doubling of fines and whether or not the courts had the ability to suspend, waive, or reduce these fines. In the case of the school doubling of fines, the school zone doubling of fines, where the zone is signed, the courts do not have the flexibility to reduce, suspend, or waive the fine or the bail. And that is also the case with safety court or with work zones. And in the case of work zones, it's whether or not the work zone is signed. But in any case, the courts may not reduce, suspend, or waive those bail amounts. And we feel that the strength of those laws should be carried to the safety corridor law. And that so another recommendation we would make is that to be consistent with the other two similar laws, that this also would carry the requirement that the fine may not be reduced, suspended, or waived.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Nelson.
Yes, thank you. Representative Thompson or Larry or Troy, do we have a study that shows how the doubling of fines has brought about greater compliance with the law?
Chairman Starr and Representative Nelson, it's difficult to extract from the data as far as reduced crashes the exact impact of doubling fines, whether it be in school zones, safety corridors, or work zones. What I did do was poll the citizen groups, the law enforcement agencies, and the courts involved to see what their reaction was so far, and we've got just a little over a year under our belt as far as reaction to this this current pilot project. And a summary of that is on the back of your testimony. And as you'll note, there is fairly overwhelming support for the doubling of fines. Not a lot of public outcry against this, a lot of law enforcement support, a lot of citizen group support, some reservations on the part of the courts because of what I mentioned about them, they're not eager to lose their flexibility. So if there's a downside, that was identified by the courts. So I recap that and say that at least what we have to date as far as studying the impact of this, it has been positive from all corners.
Follow up, Mr. Chair?
Sir, Representative Nelson.
Thank you. Gentlemen, do you know what this fine is? I mean, it's so much per mile over the speed limit. What happened?
Chairman Starr, Representative Nelson, I cannot tell you the exact bail amounts that are levied for these particular infractions. I apologize.
I will tell you they're expensive. you could get $300-$500 fine fairly rapidly if you're excessively speeding. It's not going to be cheap. In fact, that's one of the things that if I could change in there, I would make the signage that tells you you're about to get hit real hard for speeding there bigger and more bold, because I'm not interested in taking the public's money, and I don't think there either anybody in ODOT wants to take their money or anybody in law enforcement. We want them to slow down. It's literally a case of the only mechanism I could think of outside of complete new road construction to get people to slow down and save their lives.
Mr. Chair, may I add? Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson. Also, I would say that the
I'm going to have to say that I just lost my thought. That ever happened to anybody? I apologize. If they come back,
that's a senior moment.
We have to put signs closer together for him out there.
Major embarrassment.
Okay, I have thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like for you to just clarify a few things for me. I'm very happy we have a safety corridor south of Coos Bay. Mm-hmm. I'm just not clear on why you believe that they have been as successful as they've been. I know enforcement is a part of it, but is it the fact that you have your lights on in the vehicle? Is it a fact that you slow down? And on this doubling of fines, I want you to explain to me why each safety corridor would require 27 signs. You don't require 27 signs to tell me I can't drive while I'm drunk. So I think this is an overkill of some kind, which leads to a terrible expense in safety corridors. So,
Chair Starr, Representative Verger. On the signing, the fiscal impact comes if the department decides to sign all 14 currently designated corridors, and under the current amendment, if adopted, that would be withdrawn. There would not be that impact. The purpose for the additional signing is to make sure that on side roads, people that are entering the safety corridor also understand that the provision for doubling the fines does occur. And in addition, your question regards to what is the benefit, or is it slowing of the traffic? It's a combination, and reduced speeds by the presence of enforcement is a very key factor in reducing injuries if you happen to get into a crash, or increasing your reaction time if you run into a problem. And the 56% of crashes in Oregon, fatal crashes in Oregon, are speed related. So that is our primary target. But I would say, and I just recalled what I was going to say earlier, it is not only the speeding violation that is doubled in the traffic safety corridor. We additionally make a statement about other offenses, such as driving under the influence or not wearing your safety belt, which has a big impact. If you're not belted in, you do get into a crash. So,
follow up, please. So are you saying that if I don't have on my safety belt and I'm stopped in this, it would double the fine for the safety belt, or okay?
It becomes $150 instead of $75.
One of the most interesting meetings that I think that is held in Coos Bay City Hall are the group of people who have just paid their fine for the safety belt and are brought in for the 2 or 3 hour school that they have in the evening. And in fact, when you enter City Hall, if you were to see a meeting like this being held, you would wonder under what kind of duress have these people been brought to this building, because they're all just furious. And yet I've had good comments about after they've attended it and they've seen the film that they show and so forth, that they have a totally different attitude about wearing their safety belt.
Chairman Starr, Representative Berger, I would agree that the aim of law enforcement is voluntary compliance, and the alternative sentencing program is extremely valuable in getting us there. And I also, in additional response to your previous question, pointing to the chart that Troy was referring to, on the Coos Bay Safety Corridor, when designated, the fatality rate was 12.52, and in 1999 was down to zero. So
right.
I think the locals, the state, all the partners and stakeholders on that particular safety corridor are doing an excellent job, and we can see the results right here in terms of lives saved and injuries avoided.
Right.
Do you think it's necessary to have the traffic fines doubled in order to see that kind of success? Obviously, we've seen success in several corridors where we don't have a doubling in the fines.
Chair Starr, I would agree with you, and we, as I mentioned, the jury is still out on the effectiveness of doubling the fines.
it's again hard to pin an effect on that one element when you have a program that's strength is across the board with engineering education and the doubling of fines being part of the education component and then the minor engineering. So it is, it's a little difficult to pick that one out and give it a star separate from the others.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple of comments. I want to expand on something that, Terry just mentioned in talking about signage. I think you ought to consider an interesting possibility for the future. Is in, yesterday I went through a Depot Bay, and they have these little radar carts there that tell you what your speed is. If you had a similar device on a safety corridor, speed pops up on a big reader board. You drive past it, and right behind it is another reader board telling you what your fine will be. Now, I can tell you from my personal experience, when I see that little old radar,
right.
This trailer
radar.
Oh, Representative, we'll talk about that some other time. It certainly has an impact on my driving behavior, and I think you ought to consider something like that. I think it would be enormously impactful because it drives the point home very clearly, and you can't miss it. Everyone sees it. I will say that on the from I-5 into Corvallis on Highway 34, that has been a safety corridor and a tremendous problem for us over the years. A lot of fatalities there, especially in foggy conditions, which we had this morning. I drive a little slower there. You know why? And this is the enforcement component, because I know that state police target that area and the county does, and they'll nail you. And now, frankly, I've been under the impression today's the first I've learned that the fines weren't doubled there. So it plays on your mind. So I think that's one. The one thing I do want to caution, if we're talking about not giving judges flexibility here, I would suggest that there ought to be a little flexibility in these situations on the doubling of fines for only one reason, and those are emergency reasons. I realize that a patrol officer who may stop you if you're speeding, you know, you've got an emergency, you're responding to a medical emergency, or so you're trying to get someone to the hospital, or someone's at home who's very ill. The officers have the discretion to say, yeah, just slow down, or I'll lead the way in front of you with my lights on or something. I would like to see at least some flexibility there in these types of situations where the fines are going to be levied at the full amount, with the exception of what if you were responding to a medical emergency or something of that nature. I would just like to see you address that with some type of consideration. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Representative Nelson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm glad Representative Krupp brought this up, because I think that I call them speed monitors. I think they're wonderful. I believe you've proven that they work in our city of Yamhill, and while we were waiting for a traffic sign, couldn't afford the $250,000, I guess, in our community, and also had new truck transportation going through near schools. That seemed to make a difference, and so I suggest more of those. I'm curious of the cost of this speed monitor versus these other stationary signs. But I wonder, in our evaluation, do we know how many people receiving fines are routine transitors like Representative Thompson, or visitors to the state? I'm curious, because I think that could make a difference in the type of signage we use. And also wonder if there's some application we could use in, say, a two-time transgressor, you know, a person who's already received a fine for this within a certain period of time. I mean, should we be escalating, you know, the penalty, or putting behind bars, or make him, you know, become a part of the road crew?
Sort of a three strikes and you're out.
Absolutely. You lose your driver's license three times in a safety zone. Why not? But I just wonder on all three of those, if maybe we could consider them. Maybe you could let me know how you feel about them.
Chairman Starr, Representative Nelson. Like Representative Krupp, I agree, and with you as well, that the radar reader boards are very valuable. And just in response to your comment, I will carry that as a potential, as
former Representative Thompson mentioned, the economic impact is what motivates us. So if we are aware of that at the moment, perhaps that will have the needed result. As far as the cost of a radar reader board, it is approximately $8,000. I wasn't sure, Representative Nelson, what you meant by these other stationary signs. Were you?
Well, the ones, Mr. Chair, Larry, the ones you were referring to, the 27 needed, I call those stationary, so they're in the ground, aren't they?
You're right, right. And those are, they're about $12 a square foot, and they're typically 32 square feet, so in the neighborhood of $350 to $400, if I'm doing my math right quickly here. As far as the local versus out-of-state, that is something that I will put down to track as if this bill is passed as amended. We will make that part of the study to see who the offenders are. And then I also will take forward that idea of the second, third offense, the penalties increasing. I think that makes all the sense in the world that if you're going to repeat offend, that you're going to pay additional penalties for that. I'll take that forward.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nelson, the other, if you want to say, nice thing about this particular project or program is we're only talking about a handful of courts, a handful of very specific judges where citations from these corridors go, and that those judges have, at their discretion, they have a range of penalties and sanctions that they can apply. So if they're seeing somebody more than once, I'm sure they may have some unique things that they can do on their own because they live in the area as well and understand the importance and the concern for those particular corridors.
Representative Rosenbaum.
I can defer to Representative Nelson if she had a follow-up.
Thank you, Representative Rosenbaum. Mr. Chair,
yes.
I just wanted to ask as far as, you know, people from out of town. In other states, I know they have vehicles that alert people that are driving the corridor in case of bad weather. I'm particularly thinking about Highway 18 when we get icy rain and, you know, that are moving vehicles that are, you know, transiting the road, warning of danger. And I was wondering if we have that type of vehicle available, which, you know, is an alert, has an alert on it. And I mean, I've seen them work when we have a road repair going into Portland of some sort that, you know, the vehicles are moving with lighted, especially in time of, you know, bad weather or something foreseen ahead. Where the weather can change on Highway 18. I transit that road a lot. And, you know, you can leave the coast and have all sorts of changes by the time you get to McMinnville.
Can I respond to that about not that particular vehicle? We do have a vehicle that's under, we're trying to get the money together that's put together from the casino, and then the Department of Transportation has another vehicle which works as an assistant, a roadside assistance vehicle, and we're trying to expand that program on the coast and working with the casinos and the local community over there to expand that program. When it's going to come online, I'm not sure. In fact, there's another meeting, I think, this week over there, and we've been trying to, it takes quite a bit of money to put one of those and have them manned during those peak weather periods, especially during the winter months. And maybe he can tell about the our state program.
Chairman Starr, Representative Nelson. ODOT's current treatment of that particular problem is we have in Region 2, which is in which the Highway 18 safety corridor is contained, one, variable message signs that are updated virtually in real time with problem conditions, if the conditions exist, such as ice, fog, crash ahead, those sorts of things. We also have the potential for a vehicle which is similar to Comet, which operates in the Portland metro area, which you're familiar with. We also have a vehicle that is available for Highway 18, and if I'm not mistaken, does dedicate some time during the high, the peak volume times, which is the weekends on Highway 18. So, and then with the variable message signs, we're able to advise motorists of problems that they might face ahead.
Thank you. Representative Rosenbaum. Thank you.
Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you. Question, I guess, for either of you. Is there a change in this bill that clears up the confusion about whether judges have flexibility in deviating from the doubling?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Rosenbaum, this does not. Currently, it's just extending the deadline. So the signs go up as double fine. Law enforcement would place that on the citation as bail for the driver, but the judges keep their discretion whether they want to maintain the double fine or to bring it down from there.
So follow up, Mr. Yes. Chair. I guess I was a little confused then by your initial testimony. I thought that you were, or something in your written testimony, said that you were advocating to have these fines be treated the same way construction zones
are now. Mr. Chairman, Representative Rosenbaum, that's correct.
Well, but the bill doesn't do that.
The bill does not, correct. As in the original form, it does not.
And just a final follow-up, Mr. Mm-hmm. Chair, what would the change be that would be required then? I mean, is there something in the language now that created that ambiguity?
Mr. Chair, Representative Rosenbaum, yes, the placement in ORS was misleading. It was placed directly after the work zone and the school zone. So the interpretation was different according to the courts. Some assumed, but when you read the actual law, the doubling or the requirement for or the removal of the flexibility to remove, suspend, or waive the bail was not there. So it, in statute, differs from the other two laws, and it is currently a little bit ambiguous.
Good. One of the things, when I met with the police officers over there, they did say they were happy in Yamhill County with the way the judge had implemented it. So you're, and I can't say how it's being conducted in other areas of the state, but in that area of the state, there are, it seemed like the law enforcement were working well with the judges, and you know, that's what you have a judge for. I think say something about the other sections that may be a problem.
In the event that the Dash 1 amendments were amended into the bill, the additional signage obviously wouldn't be necessary because we wouldn't be bringing on more doubling of fines and other safety corridors.
That's correct. Okay. So there'd be zero fiscal impact.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
And I do have a question about that in terms of your original thoughts on the maintenance of the extra signing. Mm-hmm. You have $22,300 for the 2001-2003 biennium, and in the 2003-2005, you have $44,000, which is double the amount. Can you explain that? That seems awfully high to me.
Mr. Chair, Representative Krupp, I have to admit that I cannot explain that difference.
I think
Troy may be able to. Okay. I'm hitting him.
He's chair. He's jumping at the bit.
He's trying to wrestle that microphone away from him.
Here, have a
break.
Thank you, Troy.
Mr. Chair, Representative Krupp, that number is there because of replacements. Somebody hitting the sign, somebody defacing the sign. Something going wrong with it, or has to be moved, or others have to be added in because there's some confusion because of some of the side roads. It's a contingency amount in case some of those types of things were to occur. Unfortunately, we do see signs that are taken down or are hit, and instead of putting it in as the original install, it's basically a replacement or maintenance of that particular area.
And Mr. Chair, if I may, near the bottom of that document, it talks about annual maintenance costs are estimated to be 10% of installation costs. Is that a number that runs true throughout your system, a 10% maintenance figure for these signs?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Krupp, these are numbers presented to us from the sign shop as their best estimate of what would occur. These are larger, one of the largest signs that we're going to be able to put out there. And quite often are going to be the two pillar signs. Mm-hmm. And just based on their experience, they had said that they would want us to put in the fiscal about this amount, just in case something does happen.
Okay, Mr. Chair, then if I may, that leads me to the next question is, can you show us historical data on how much you're spending now on your if you could get that for us at some point, I'd like to see that as a percentage. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Is there anyone else in the audience wish to testify on House Bill 2569? Seeing none, I will close the public hearing on House Bill 2569, open a work session on House Bill 2569. Do I have a motion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Brown.
I move the -1 amendment to the bill.
Representative Brown has moved the -1 amendment to House Bill 2569. Through discussion on the amendment.
Mr. Chair, it does include the 27 signs.
It does not. There will be no additional signage because this basically the amendments, we adopt these amendments and it just extends the sunset.
That's all it does.
All it does.
On the two corridors that are currently in play.
Exactly. I'm comfortable with that personally because of the fact that these corridors are working in other areas. We've had a significant reduction in traffic fatalities. I think we need to have an opportunity to have a longer look at how these traffic fines and the dubbing of them is working and is working.
Well, Mr. Chair, from my perspective, for the record, I believe that higher fines are appropriate in certain conditions. I know police officers have discretion in terms of the fining in certain road conditions. I think that Representative Nelson has a great idea about second offenders, third offenders, giving judges more flexibility there, perhaps. I personally believe that from a person, I just know how I am, okay, is that when I'm faced with a much larger economic loss, I'm a great deal more conservative in my actions. So I tend to believe that doubling of fines has some impact, but I think agree with you, Mr. Chair, that maybe we need a little more time to really ascertain that. Philosophically, I have no problem with it, but if it's not necessary to do that, then there are other things that we ought to be doing. I guess one of the things I'd like to see is if it costs so much more to sign these safety corridors and to perhaps talk about some of the new technology ideas we've talked about here today that I think would be very helpful, that we ought to, if we ought to consider, if we're going to double the fines, we ought to allow a special provision for the extra doubling to be used to maintain the program or add the cost to it or pay for the cost of the initial installations. Now, I know some of the courts don't like that idea because the money, how it flows through the court system into the counties and so on and so forth, but I think that that ought to be a cost-responsible way. Basically an offender or user pays type of a philosophy. And I think we ought to consider that at some point in time, maybe not now, but in the future.
Very good.
Mr. Chair, I would just also like to comment. I really like Representative Krupp's ideas. I also would just like to encourage them to look at a better way to sign. I think that there is a better way to get the attention. And also, I think we need to really look at the expense of that and the maintenance doubling in the next biennium. I agree with those remarks.
Representative Devlin.
Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to vote.
You just like to vote.
You get some points.
Is there, we got a motion on the floor to move the -1 amendments into House Bill 2569. Is there any objection? Seeing none, the motion passes. The chair would entertain a motion on the bill.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Brown.
I move House Bill 2569 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Brown has moved House Bill 2569 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. No more discussion. Okay, can we call the roll, please?
Representative Brown.
Aye.
Devlin.
Aye.
Krupp.
Aye.
Merkley. Nelson.
Aye.
Aye.
Berger?
Aye.
Donner?
Aye.
Star. Aye. Motion passes. Mr. Brown, would you like to pay the bill?
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I was going to, for a moment, I was going to suggest that Representative Thompson does, but however, I remember that he's not exactly an elected member anymore of the body. Sorry about that.
Well, thank you, committee. We'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2137. And Kelly Taylor signed up to testify. We'll have John introduce the bill.
Thank you, Chair Starr, members of the committee. You have before you House Bill 2137. It involves several technical changes regarding vehicle plate transactions, ATV registration requirements, specific vehicle accident reporting requirements, and issuance of temporary registration. Also, you should have before you, I know it was delivered in your packet, two amendments by the Division of Motor Vehicles. One which eliminates the use of snowmobile registration funds for the enforcement of certain violations, which is in direct response to the Attorney General letter of guidance, and deletes proposed changes that the department itself proposed initially in the bill, House Bill 2137, to the manufactured structured registration exemption process. Currently, there is no, we just also received no fiscal statement. There's no expenditure impact statement from legislative fiscal, and also on both amendments, and there is no revenue impact.
Thank you. Kelly.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Kelly Tater with the Department of Transportation, and we did request this bill. Again, this is, we had one about a week or so ago that was driver license related, sort of technical and housekeeping changes, and this one is vehicle related, small changes. I'd like to walk through some of them with you. One is to allow Oregon Trail plates to be transferred from vehicle to vehicle without requiring them to become a custom plate. That is an exception that the legislature had in place that they considered when they created Oregon Trail plates and was there for many years. And when Oregon Trail plates were discontinued, unfortunately, that exception was deleted along with it. And yet people, when they bought them all along, were told this exception will remain. And so we'd like to suggested that be put back into statute. Another was for the reference to annual DEQ testing on undercover vehicles. We've talked with DEQ. Those vehicles should be biannual. We don't know why in the statute it's been that way for many, many years, but we'd like to get the word annual out of there. It causes confusion. Those are regular passenger vehicles and are tested biannually like all other passenger vehicles. To allow car dealers to issue temporary registration to customers who are buying cars and wanting to move the plates they have from their old car to their new car, that's something that today they're technically not allowed to do, but in the future they'll be doing other business with us on our behalf, and we'd like to allow them to do that. To clarify that registration fees are not required if the plates are valid and they're being transferred, there's just it says that in the law, but not as clear as it could. So we'd like to clarify that. You should only need to pay registration fees if your plates are expired. Aligning a couple of statutes of insurance related, removing the reference to private property and replacing it with premises open to the public. This is when insurance agents, your agent reports to us that somebody was driving uninsured. You are not required to file a report if it's on private property. If a farmer has acreage and has an accident on their own property, they're not required to report, so there's no need for the insurance agents to tell us if the farmer was uninsured, which I doubt they would be. But anyway, it aligns it with the other statutes. There's always premises open to the public for that. And then repealing the requirement, and I have a slight typo here. It's supposed to say for snowmobile and all-terrain vehicle accidents to be reported. Both snowmobiles and all-terrain vehicles are exempt from the insurance laws. We get very few accident reports in, but when we do, we have no authority to process them. You're not required to have insurance on them. Most people do, but we don't check them for insurance, and we don't suspend your driver's license. There's no need to have the accident report coming in. They're exempt from the insurance reporting. So there's no need for the accident report. And then some cleanup from last session. The registration and everything of all-terrain vehicles, all that whole program was moved over to parks. And a person can get an optional title, but they don't need to register anymore. They get a decal from the Parks Department to operate. And so we're doing some cleanup there with exempting Class 1 and Class 3 ATVs from registration and title requirements. Again, they can do the title option if they'd like. And then the two amendments that Mr. Leon mentioned, we did request the Dash 1 again. It's one small piece of the compliance of proper use of highway funds that the AG has pointed out we needed. You cannot use snowmobile registration money for enforcement. Enforcement was taken out in the 1980 Constitution rewrite. It's just been sitting there all this time. I don't even know if it's really being used for that, but we need to get it out of the statute. And the Dash 2 amendments repeal, move Section 8 out of the bill. We'd like to have more time to work with the affected parties during the interim on this. So, anyway. So we asked for House Bill 2137 To provide some housekeeping, some clarity, and consistency, I would ask the committee to support the bill and the two amendments, please. Thank you.
Other questions? Representative Verger.
Kelly, I have a question about the repeal requirements and no need to report accidents.
Mm-hmm.
would a snow skier fall under this same person skiing? Because we just had a death and a young man convicted who was skiing and hit another skier. If a snowmobile hits a skier, they're not responsible at all?
Mr. Chair and Representative Verger, financial responsibility is having liability insurance, and today they are exempt under the law from having financial responsibility. It doesn't mean you wouldn't be liable for civil penalties or the fact that you injure someone. You still would be responsible. You're just not required to have insurance to operate the vehicle. That's current today.
I see.
Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Shirley Benson.
Mr. Chairman, members of this committee, I'm Shirley Benson, a member of the Oregon State Snowmobile Association, and representing them today. My fears have been the lack of reporting, and I don't. Snowmobile accidents are can be between two snowmobiles, snowmobile and a tree or a rock, in the parking lot between a snowmobile and the car, or a snowmobile and a trailer. And I guess I just had some easiness if there was no reporting, particularly for the accident in the snow park lot. The car is going to have to report. The snowmobile doesn't. Does that put the snowmobile, you know, in a bad light? Or I just was worried about the insurance company backing out of paying a claim. That was my main concern. And I want to kind of a funny on the use of enforcement. In the early days of snowmobiling, the state police bought two planes, and over the radio came the report that they paid for the two planes with money from snowmobiles. That was probably in the mid-70s. So that it did happen.
Mm-hmm.
But, we have no real heartburn, but we just have real concern about would the insurance industry find this a way to not pay claims. And I made a lot of calls, and other folks have made a lot of calls, and we can't get high enough on the ladder to determine if we've reached a real decision maker. So that's the only thing. But it just seems like there should be somewhere, if there's an injury accident, to replace it. And the way I see this, that's been taken out.
Okay. Representative Devlin?
Mr. Chairman, the concern that I would have would be, I don't know if Ms. Taylor won, if DMV no longer licenses the vehicles, it's hard to track an accident report. You have no basis.
Mm-hmm. The snowmobiles are staying licensed for the DMV.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Kelly Taylor again. We get very few accident reports, be it from snowmobiles or ATVs, and when we do get them, we don't process them. They don't go onto a driving record. Nothing happens to them. They just sit in a drawer and eventually are discarded. We have no authority to process them. We don't look for insurance. When you're exempt from financial responsibility, it means we don't go to check to see whether or not you really did have insurance, and if you don't, then we suspend your driver's license. That's what happens on passenger cars. These vehicles have been exempt from financial responsibility for many years. So I'm going to make a jump here on an assumption that claims are being paid today without the accident report. So I know of no reason they're exempt today. We don't get accident reports, very, very few, so I'm assuming that claims are being paid today with or without the accident report. The other thing I would mention is Oregon is a no-fault state, so even having an accident report doesn't prove on your record, doesn't prove you're at fault. So, and that's just the way Oregon's insurance laws have always been.
President's honor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just for clarification, after we visited, I called the insurance commissioner. There's no way that that insurance company can get off the hook. It has nothing to do with whether they file with the state or not.
Okay. Thank you.
So
that's good to know.
That's good information. I appreciate you calling through with that, Representative Honor.
Thank you.
Ms. Benson, does that
give you a little bit? Yeah, that's my fear is at ease.
Good. I'm glad.
Thank you very much.
I'd just like to say to Ms. Benson, I really appreciate people wanting to be really sure that they are doing the right thing.
Sure.
And trying to weigh on the side of having an accident report rather than trying to find some way to get out of doing one.
Right.
So I'd just like to make
absolutely.
Thanks, Shirley. That's great. Thank you, Shirley. That's
wonderful. Any other comments? Anyone else in the audience wish to testify in House Bill 2137? Seeing none, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2137 and we'll open a work session on House Bill 2137.
Chairman.
Representative Devlin.
Move the -1 amendment.
Representative Devlin has moved the -1 amendments to House Bill 2137. Is there discussion? Is there objection? Seeing none, the -1 amendments are moved into House Bill 2137.
Chairman, moving
Devlin.
-2 amendment.
Devlin has moved the -2 amendment to House Bill 2137. Is there discussion? Is there objection? Seeing none, the motion passes.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Devlin.
Move the bill to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Devlin has moved House Bill 2137 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Kate, will you call the roll, please?
Representative
Brown. Aye.
Devlin.
Aye.
Aye.
Nelson.
Aye.
Rosenbaum.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Water.
Aye.
Aye. Motion
carries. Boom,
boom, boom. Let's carry the bill. Do I have any volunteers to carry this bill?
Anyone here a snowmobiler?
Donner talked to the insurance commissioner. It sounds like a perfect bill for him.
I'll
carry
Representative Donner will carry the bill.
Thank you, Representative.
Sorry. No other business before us on the agenda. Committee is adjourned.